Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio, America's original 12-step radio show. From addiction to recovery, from despair to encouragement, and everything in between. This is real life. And now, Steppin' Out Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. In each week, or as you know, for those who have listened or in case you haven't listened, we feature stories of inspiration and hope, of transformation, of people who have turned their lives around from insurmountable odds and have come out on the other side. And today, my guest, it's a little bit different than what we usually do because we usually feature stories of those who have overcome addiction. But I felt that this was such an important topic that we're veering a little bit away from addiction and recovery. However, many of our speakers have either been driven to suicide and succeeded, sadly, or talked about their many attempts at suicide. And today I'm really excited and proud to welcome John Troutwine to our show. Here's some statistics of what we're going to talk about. According to Teen Help, there is a death by suicide every 12.3 minutes, and a lot of these are 13 to 18 year olds. John has a fascinating background. He was a former pitcher with the Boston Red Sox, so he's familiar with heartbreak and grief. But I won't go there. And he has this, you know, and again, I said to him how sorry I am when we were off the air. He has a sad story to tell about how he suffered the loss of his son his son Will, who committed suicide at 15. But what I found, you know, so scary about it as a parent and, you know, all of us, there were no signs. So, John, welcome to Steppin' Out.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And I wanted to state that you started a foundation in your son's honor. It's called the Will to Live Foundation. And check it out. You can also get his book. It's called My Living Will, A Father's Story of Love and Hope. And it's written by John Troutwine, Troutwein. You could get it on Amazon, or you could go to the website and get an autographed copy at www.will-to-live.org. So, John, on Steppin' Out Radio, we begin at the beginning. So can you tell us your beginning story with your son and how this happened?
Sure, I'd be happy to, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. And as the interview goes on, you'll hear me say things like talk about it, because it becomes such an important part of really my mission these days. My wife Susie and I and our four children. Will was the oldest. Will, Tammy, Michael, and Holland. We live here in Johns Creek, Georgia, just north of Atlanta, and really have always had just a wonderful existence, a very, very happy home. My wife and I have a wonderful marriage, and if you met people in our neighborhood or in our area, they would tell you that the Troutwines have it going. You know, the Troutwines are living the dream. And unfortunately, on October 15th in 2010, the dream came to an end when our oldest child, our 15-year-old son, took his life in the early morning hours in his own room. He actually hung himself in his bedroom. And, you know, my wife found him that morning as we were getting the kids up for school, and our world came to a crashing halt and a crashing change, and nothing was ever the same again. And to be honest, I didn't think I was going to get through it. My son was wonderful. He was big and strong and healthy.
And he was successful.
He was so handsome. He was popular. He had an army of friends, and I think that's what was just so stunning about his death, was that he was so popular. He was so well-liked. He had it all. He was a great musician. He wrote songs. Mm-hmm. He was in a band. He plays concerts and things, and other kids wanted to be him. He was, like we talked about, big and strong and handsome. He was a good student. He was played on the lacrosse team. He was a great athlete, and his death just stunned not only his immediate family, but the community as well. I mean, this is really interesting. This is what, when I talk to parents, right, and they're listening to a dad. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'm not a doctor. I'm a businessman, who, an ex-baseball player, and, and I'm just a dad who lost his son to suicide and to depression and mental illness, something that we never even thought about, let alone talked about. And so his death was so, took us by such surprise, but immediately, and I'm literally immediately that very day, I started to learn about suicide and teen suicide and mental illness and depression. And I have to be honest, if someone would have told me that my son had depression, I would have been very upset. I would have been offended. Mm-hmm. And I would have said, you don't know my son, you know, back off.
Right.
And
that's very honest.
Because I didn't know what depression was. As far as I'm concerned, you know, depression was a character flaw. It was a choice that people who didn't understand made. And if you had told me, or if Will would have told me he had depression, I would have talked him out of it. I'm 100% convinced of that, because I'm a good salesman, right? But what I have since learned, Denise, is that it is an illness. It is truly an illness in the brain. It is a deformity. It is a physical illness.
Mm-hmm. It is.
But unfortunately, it's called a mental illness. And because of that, there's a stigma. Because of that, there's a reluctance to talk about it. And I met people that weekend of Will's death who lost family members to suicide, people that I had known for years, mm-hmm. had never talked about it. I said, why didn't you ever tell me that? We're friends. Oh, we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if your brother would have died by, you know, cancer or hit by a car or some other tragic way, would you talk about it? You say, oh, yeah. But, you know, it was depression and mental illness, so we don't talk about it. We're embarrassed by it.
Right.
And,
so true.
You know, that stigma cost me my son. The fact that there is a stigma. If you have a heart issue, if you have cancer, if you have diabetes, you go see a doctor and you get treatment. If you have a mental illness, you go up in your room and you close the door and you sure as heck don't tell anybody. And if you do tell somebody, they might say to you, yeah, keep this between us.
Right.
And until we can change that, depression will still go untreated. And when an illness goes untreated, it turns into a tragedy. And that's what happened with Will. And so very shortly after his death, my wife and I decided, you know, we are going to spare nothing. We're going to hide nothing. Every question we get asked, we're going to answer honestly and truthfully. He hung himself on a closet door in his bedroom. A 6'1" boy hung himself on a 6-foot door. How does that happen? Well, guess what? Now people are aware that it can happen. Little things like that. We wanted to make sure that it was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Depression is everywhere. 1 in 6 teenagers have it. 1 in 6. So
yeah.
Every single person who's listening to your show knows many people with depression. And I'd like to bet that all of these people listening to your show don't realize that, because I certainly didn't.
Oh, yeah, no. Or like you said, which I think is so true and really profound, really, is that if, number one, if someone would have told you, you would have said, no way. Number two, he wasn't your typical, you know, he wasn't bullied. He wasn't, you know, he had, like you said, he had it all. But maybe if he did share it with somebody, they'd say, oh, are you kidding? You have everything. And then that makes that person feel worse. I know.
Right.
I wish I could just think my way out of it, you know, because we've done so many stories about people, and that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
They self-medicate, and because they have tried to tell people, and they're like, are you kidding me? You have a great job. You're good looking. You're on the lacrosse team. Well, I wish I was you, you know, and then they're like,
right.
Yeah, what is wrong with me? Like, I should. And then you start feeling guilt, you know, the stories we hear, like, I feel bad that I have everything, and why do I feel this way? You know, so
right.
Anyway. I didn't
right.
mean to go on, but so you
no.
decided you were going to tell the world everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and tell
Correct.
Us how, you know, how life is, you know, going on with that.
Yeah, so we didn't know how we were going to do it, right? But very quickly, we started to hear, maybe the best way to describe it is I was I spoke at my son's funeral, and at the funeral, it was just a tragic, tragic experience, and all of his friends were wearing their lacrosse jerseys, teammates, and as I was talking to him, or talking to them, almost preaching to them that, you know, Will loved being on the team, and Will loved being with you guys. That's what a win to Will was hanging with his friends. And while I was giving this speech, I started to notice friends of mine from my elementary, middle school, and high school and college days from Chicago. And remember, I'm in Atlanta now. Mm-hmm. So Will dies on a Friday, and on Monday, 3 days later, there's 30 guys there that I grew up with.
Wow.
Who I certainly did not call or talk to, right? And some of these people that were there, Denise, I hadn't spoken to in 30 years.
Wow.
And so it hit me that, you know, these are the guys that I went through life with. I learned about life with. I went through my first with. You know, when you're a teenager, you're going through all your firsts.
Sure.
And these are the guys that I shared all the wonderful times. These are the guys that I called when I got engaged, and I called when I made the big leagues with the Red Sox. These are the guys that I called when my wife was pregnant, when Will was born.
Right.
And it hit me that every groomsman in my wedding and all four godfathers to my kids were friends that I met when I was Will's age, when I was a teenager.
Right.
My life friends, we now call them our life teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I met them when I was Will's age. And at that point, it hit me how I can perhaps do something positive about this tragedy. And I was going to create this foundation that was going to get kids like Will to recognize that they've met their groomsmen. They've met life's best friends. And if they know that, maybe they'll talk about it a little bit more. Maybe they'll share things a little bit more. Maybe they'll listen a little bit more closely. And if I can do that, I can improve their relationship. And if I can do that, that will improve their will to live. And then all of a sudden that hit me. There's the name of the foundation.
And that happens to be his name. I have the chills, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, because we refused to call it the Will Troutwine Memorial because it just, we didn't want copycats. We didn't want someone else to say, oh, gosh, I want a foundation named after me, so I'll take my life. And, you know, we wanted something that was, you know, that was really kind of independent of Will, because we all could use an increase in our will to live, right? And what a better way than by enhancing the relationships that we have with our friends, right, in our lives.
And so, right, and I want to give out the website. You know, give out the website, please, and tell us, also give out your book, because it's so important.
Sure. Yeah, so the website is will-2to-live.org. And on there, you'll see the various activities that we do, and it's all by the kids. We wanted the foundation to be the kids' foundation. So Will's friends came to my house and said, we want to do something, Mr. Trout. We want to do something positive. We want to have fun events. Tomorrow is the 8th running, Denise, of the Where There's a Will, There's a Way 5K.
Wow.
A bunch of high school kids started this.
Wow.
1 month after Will died. And on that first run, there was about 1,000 people, and we raised $25,000. It funded scholarships. It funded, implementing signs of suicide programs here in Georgia. And tomorrow, the race is tomorrow. We've already raised over $100,000.
Oh, my gosh. Great.
This is by the kids, and the money is used then to educate the adults in the kids' lives to better motivate the kids themselves. So we call it this nice circle of hope. And it's so rewarding, and it's so positive, and I'm so proud and pleased of that.
That you should be.
Here I am. I literally walked out of a high school auditorium to do this interview. I just spoke to 2,000 students, and I told them that life is really hard for you guys, isn't it? I didn't have to deal with the internet. I didn't have a cell phone.
Well, the internet makes it hard. It does make it hard.
Yeah. The kids in our lives, wake up knowing that if they make a mistake today, everybody they've ever known will know about it by dinner.
Right. It's so
and
true.
That's something I didn't have to deal with.
None of us did. We went home and never heard from anybody till the next day. And then, you know, you had your little circle. And I also want to mention your book because it's really important.
Sure.
My Living Will, A Father's Story of Loss and Hope. And it's by John Troutwine, Troutwein, in case you just joined us. Now, I have a question, though. Like, you said there were no signs. Did you ever uncover any signs after the fact? Like, oh, okay, so he had said this to a friend, but I didn't.
Yeah. So great. So I really appreciate that question. So the answer was there really wasn't any of the typical signs that you would see. Like on our website, we even have there's a menu item called Contacts for Help, and it goes into, you know, what the American Society of Suicide Prevention talks about signs, and, you know, becoming more recluse, becoming more angry, giving up things they love, not wanting to do things they normally love to do, being quiet, all of these things, not eating, not sleeping.
All poor hygiene, things, I think, right? Like poor,
right?
Yeah.
And Will really didn't show any of those signs, mm-hmm. except we did notice that there was a couple times he said he wasn't sleeping great. And that's so important for the parents out there to understand. If your teenager is not sleeping well, there are really, really bad things going on in their mind at 3 in the morning.
Right.
Because nothing good happens at 3 in the morning when you can't sleep. At 5 in the morning, it's really interesting. The psychiatrist will tell you that's the devil's hours, you know, that 1, 2, 3 in the morning, because sunrise is a long way away, and that's a daunting thing. It's 3 in the morning. I got all these tests tomorrow. I'm going to be tired. I can't fall back, right?
Mm-hmm.
At 5 in the morning, sunrise is an hour away.
Right.
So
wow,
we never even thought of that. And when Will said he wasn't sleeping very well, a couple times he said it, we said, okay, we'll take some melatonin, and maybe we'll try to get off the computer a little bit earlier and let your brain relax. You know,
right.
But we didn't really take it that
Yeah,
serious.
That's exactly what I would have said to my girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's just, I always say, parents, just monitor the sleeping. And if they're not sleeping, you need to act. You need to do something about it. I don't know what it is, but
mm-hmm.
whether you see a doctor or whether you do melatonin or something stronger, but they need sleep. And interestingly enough, you know, Will took his life around 3 in the morning.
Wow.
And, you know, that night, he was happy. That night, he had studied for a test he was going to ace because I quizzed him on it. That night, we went to dinner, and he told me that could I get up early on Saturday to help him go get his driver's permit.
Wow.
Right? A 15-year-old boy is going to get his driver's permit, and he kills himself the day before.
Right.
Right? I mean, I really think when he went to bed at 11 o'clock and told me he loved me,
mm-hmm.
that was not on his mind. But when he woke up at 2 in the morning and couldn't sleep, then the demons come, and he's suffering from depression, which, of course, I didn't realize, I didn't know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, right. Sleeping's an important part.
Right.
The other thing, so after he died, we never heard from a friend. There was no messages from friends or talking like that. We did find a notebook, and in his notebook there were pictures of suicide. There
really?
Were pictures of people, of you know, boys, hanging themselves and shooting themselves in the head. So we never knew that. That was in his backpack.
Right.
So again, you know, we probably looked in his backpack maybe 6 months before. We typically didn't do that. I mean, there'd been no reason to. And
right.
So when parents ask me, should I have, I'll say, you know, that's your decision. But just know, had I looked at Will's backpack, he probably still would be alive today.
Wow. Yeah, or even monitoring their social media.
Yeah.
You know, their Facebook page
we were friends. Yeah. And we were friends with him on Facebook, so we saw everything he was doing, and, you know, there was nothing really abnormal there. He was going through the typical problems and challenges of a teenager.
Right.
Yeah. But,
and
you know,
it's
what
just
I did,
like you said, it's a disease. You know, it's you know, when people say, I don't understand it, you know, and I hate when people say, you know, it's selfish. No, it's not. They're in so much pain that
yeah.
Like in their mind, it's what needs to be done, you know,
yeah.
it's because it's a disease, because it's such an illness, you know.
Right.
And have you found in your, you know, in this world that you're in now, lots of other parents that have come forth with the same type of story?
You know, the answer is yes. It's not quite as prevalent. What I have found is because of our story, people are talking more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's great. So what I do here is I'll get calls from parents saying, hey, I'm worried my son said this. And I'm like, that's fabulous news. And they're like, what? I said, don't you understand? He's reaching out. Will never gave me a chance. He died. He just he went from great to dead.
Right.
Your son is actually saying, Mom, I'm thinking about doing this. He's reaching for help, so can you help me here? That is a wonderful thing, even though it's an awful thing. Does that make sense? And it's a
no. It makes,
you know,
total sense.
I'm envious, right? And I go, this is going to sound weird. I'm envious of you. Gosh, I wish I would have had this chance.
Right.
I know it's awful. I know it's hard. But here's what you need to understand: 1 in 6 suffer from depression. 90% of suicide comes from depression. So you might want to think about that. Go to counseling. Go see it. It's perfectly okay. It's treatable. It's common. It's curable. It's
right.
Okay.
Right, right.
It's okay to not be okay, and then sometimes it's hard for us parents to to deal with because we want our kids to be okay.
Or your kids, you know, don't say, I don't want to go talk to somebody, I'm fine, and, you know, it's a struggle, you know, but if you know exactly, you can, it's better to know, obviously, because you could do something. There was a young girl, older than your son, but in college, I don't know if you heard of her, her name was Madison Hollerim, and she went to UPenn, and, you know, there were many signs there, but they never thought
she was the athlete, right?
Yes. Yeah. But she was like the perfectionist. Was your son a perfectionist? Like, if he didn't get an A, did he sink into a little bit of a depression, or was he carefree?
He was a little bit more carefree. Mm-hmm. But the perfectionist, that is a common thing, right? And but with Will, what he was is he was the consultant. Mm. So what does that mean? Is he was always helping his friends who were struggling.
Interesting.
And so I was told immediately that is a very common case for depression and suicide, the reluctance to admit that you yourself are struggling.
Right. So you listen to everybody else, but you never say, oh, yeah, no, that's so true. And what about siblings? Did any of his siblings see a little bit or anything or no?
No.
See?
They really didn't. You know, they're just like us. They were just absolutely devastated by it.
Of course.
You know, Will was the oldest, and they worshipped him, and and it's kind of fun for me now. He has three younger siblings, and Tommy, who's at the University of Georgia, started the club Will to Live at the University of Georgia, and they had a big fundraiser last Wednesday night.
That's great.
And my next son, Michael, is a senior in high school, and he's the president of Club Will to Live here. And my daughter's in eighth grade, and she started the Club Will to Live in her middle school. So
maybe we should start a club nationwide.
We do, clubs and schools are easy to form, right?
Right.
The club is about teaching people to love each other and teaching people to realize that you have life teammates and reach out and talk. So it's a nice way of, we've been able to expand the foundation outside of the Atlanta area through that, because otherwise because I have a real job, right? It's hard for me to give speeches every day.
The message is you mentioned schools. Okay, your son had none of the signs, but, you know, in the school where my girls went, you know, there was actually a couple of suicides, you know, spread out at different times. And one was certainly getting bullied on Twitter. My girls even showed me after the fact. And are schools doing anything for this?
They really are. And, you know, that one thing that's been really interesting is a TV show on Netflix, you know, The 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, I saw it. Did you?
I did see it. It was very difficult for me.
I'm sure.
For many, many reasons. And it was I wasn't thrilled by it all in all.
I agree.
Because I think the message it sent was slightly more dramatic. It kind of implied that there aren't places to go, and it kind of implied that talking about it is not worth it, and that's not the case.
Right.
And it also kind of gave an impression that, you know, suicide were for revenge. And that is never, that doesn't happen. Kids do not take their lives because of revenge. Kids take their lives because they are ill with a mental illness.
And they're in pain.
So
right.
I was a little worried about that, but I will tell you this, Denise. I've been doing this for 7 years now. I've been trying to get schools to talk about it. Now, I speak to schools all the time, and that's great, particularly high school.
Mm-hmm.
In 7 years, I have spoken to 100 high schools and one middle school.
Good
because
for you.
The middle schools were like, oh, I'm a little afraid because maybe you'll put the idea in their heads. I'm like, no, I'm not. That's a myth. You don't put your idea.
Suicide
is not an idea that gets put in their head.
No.
But what this show did, it made every school send a letter home to the parents. Because kids were watching it in secret on their phones.
Yeah, I watch it. And I know what you mean. I hear that. Yeah, I watch it too with my daughters.
So all of a sudden, the schools were talking about it, and they had to address it, and they had to make sure there was counseling, avenues to get to counseling, avenues for the students to talk to somebody within the school, and that's a fabulous, wonderful thing.
Good.
So the speech I just gave at a high school, I spoke at Lambert High School here in North Atlanta, and, the counseling group and the club Will to Live here asked me to speak, right? And And that's wonderful because it gets, because I'm speaking to kids, telling them that this is really hard, guys. So you have it harder than I did. So just understand that. You still have to do it, but this is really hard. But together it's a little bit easier. So talk to each other and be there for each other, because it's a tough world we live in right now, and it's nothing like the world that your parents and your teachers grew up in. It just isn't.
No, we had
and just
it
that
so
understanding,
different.
That awareness is important.
We certainly had it different. You know, in some ways people could say, oh, it was harder, but I don't believe it was. I think social media, social media also, you know, do you have any daughters?
I do. She's in eighth grade.
Right, but when you go on, like, the Instagrams, everybody's gorgeous and everybody's perfect, and it's not real.
Yep.
It causes a depression in girls and body image issues and, you know, things that, you know, when we went home, you know, we went outside and played. We weren't even, you know, thinking of that. But anyway, our time is almost up. I want to thank you so much. You're so eloquent.
Sure.
You're so, giving to give back the way you did, because it's certainly not easy. And you're taking something tragic and saving lives. I mean, I'm sure people will hear your story and save a life. And most of us can't say that.
Well, I appreciate it, and really the goal is to, you know, just to improve lives, because that's a wonderful thing, right? And I think that's why I wrote the book. You know, I am in a really good place, and if you would have told me 8 years ago that I would be doing the things I'm doing and living the life I'm living after the suicide death of my oldest child, I would have told you, no, I'm crawled up in a ball somewhere.
Right, so the message is definitely hope.
Through my life teammates giving me hope, right, and through this foundation and watching these kids the way they navigate through this has really been a motivational side of it. And that's why I wrote the book, because I wanted people to, A, be more aware, but B, also understand that, you know, good does exist, and sometimes you need a friend to show it to you. And that's what happened to us.
John, thank you. It's will-2-live.org. I urge everybody to go on there, look for the signs, because we can't bury our heads in the sand and say, not our kids. So thank you so much, and continued good luck to you, the foundation, and all the people that you're saving. Take care.
Thank you.